it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back into another edition of On the Record, where we talk with people who are in the know about upcoming opponents for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Today, I'm joined by Jack Harris of the LA Times to preview this week's Diamondbacks-Dodgers series here Monday through Wednesday. Jack, we really appreciate your time today. Thanks for hopping on.
Yeah, you bet.
So Shohei Ohtani, Jack, I guess I'll start there because that just sort of feels right with the Los Angeles Dodgers. Suffice it to say, it's been a pretty eventful month or so for that man, but it does not seem like it's affected his production on the field.
Yeah, no, it's there have been the two kind of lanes of Ohtani stories this year, which is all the stuff surrounding the gambling and theft scandal involving his now ex-interpreter, Ipe Mizuhara. And then, his play on the field, which has been as good and maybe even a little bit better than advertised for a Dodger team that, you know, brings him in on a $700 million contract, kind of put all their chips in the middle to add this guy this offseason. Even, you know, he's not pitching this year, you know, coming off of Tommy John last year. Even though he's in a new surrounding, even though like he had the guy that's closest to him, previously in his career, and Ipe, you know, on top of everything else, like he just isn't there around him every day anymore, supporting him. It's been kind of amazing to watch how seamless this has looked for him, how well he's played, and how quickly he seems to have settled in with this Dodger lineup.
You mentioned the $700 million that the Dodgers spent on Ohtani. Of course, that's not the only money that they spent over the offseason. There was the Yamamoto deal to Oscar Hernandez. They made a big trade for Tyler Glasnow. The Dodgers are certainly, you know, generally one of the more active teams in the league. But this offseason in particular, spending over $1 billion on this team, the Diamondbacks obviously are, I mean, the last time these two teams played, this was a pretty big moment for the Dodgers getting swept by Arizona in the first round. I imagine Dodgers fans did not take too well to that. Do you think did that series have some impact on the amount of spending that the Dodgers did this offseason, do you think?
I think that the Dodgers were going to go after Ohtani no matter what, and they were probably going to go after somebody like Yamamoto no matter what.
Sure.
For all that those guys bring on the field, there's obviously all the off-field stuff, the, you know, marketing presence that they bring, the international footprint that they helped the Dodgers create in Japan. Like, there's a reason that the Dodgers ownership group is who their jersey patch sponsor is this year. So, but I think with some of the other moves, somebody like Tyler Glasnow, the Dodgers swinging that trade, you know, that was, to me, directly in response to just the lack of quality starting pitching that the Dodgers had in the past couple postseasons, but especially with what the Diamondbacks exposed in that NLDS last year. Getting somebody like a Teoscar Hernandez, you know, last year the Dodgers, when they were trying to fill out their outfield, they did some more piecemeal moves. They went out and got David Peralta, and they trusted some more young guys in this offseason.
Sure.
They said, you know what, we're going to spend a little bit more. We're going to get an everyday player, somebody who can hit a lot more home runs, be a more productive contributor for us. So, you know, that series last year to me was kind of like the culmination of what's been this just kind of strange period of Dodger history where they are so good in the regular season, where they seem to have such dominant rosters. But they're not only losing in October frequently, but they're doing it in ways like you saw last year where they can't get out of the first round, where they're facing a team that on paper they should have been a lot better than and aren't only losing, but they're getting swept. And they're just looking like a team that, you know, you get in October and there's suddenly all these flaws that get exposed. So this was going to be a big offseason for LA regardless. Losing to the Diamondbacks and losing in the way they did in that series last year, I think only raised the level of urgency they had to try to fill some of these holes and address some of the problems that have popped up in postseasons for them.
Do you think this series carries some special significance for the Dodgers at all, given the last time they played at Chase Field and what happened?
Yeah, the Dodgers are adamant that it doesn't, and this has been okay. because of all the postseason disappointments the team has. Like, this has been one of the annual things, right? Like, last year when they go to San Diego, it's like, oh, is this a revenge series against the Padres when they played the Braves a couple years ago?
Sure.
Is this a revenge series in Atlanta? I think it's not, and the reason it isn't is because something like last year, it's less, you know, if you're somebody who's with the Dodgers or a Dodger fan or whatever, it's less about what the D-backs did and more about what your own team didn't do, right? It's sure. The fact that it's not that Gabriel Moreno had this big series and that the D-backs rotation came out and suffocated their lineup. It's that Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman didn't hit. It's that Lance Lynn gave up four home runs in an inning. It's that Clayton Kershaw got knocked around and the defense wasn't very good behind him. Like the frustrations from those series and something like last year's NLDS, it has less to do with the D-backs and more about the Dodgers' own failings in those situations. So that's why, you know, coming into this weekend or this week, you know, it's a division series. That's important. You have a D-backs team that, you know, even with all of the injuries that they've had, like, is still one that is probably going to be somewhere in the playoff picture this year that, you know, you don't want to be dropping games to. But at the same time, anything that has to do with last October, I think it's so much more about what the Dodgers failed to do themselves that it's not creating this like revenge mindset coming back to Chase Field.
Looking at the pitching matchups in this series, we have James Paxton against Tommy Henry tonight. We have D-backs newcomer Jordan Montgomery scheduled to go tomorrow against Landon Knack, who I know has just made a couple starts in the big leagues at this point. Yamamoto goes on Wednesday. Zach Gallen figures to make that start for the Diamondbacks, although that's sort of pending his health status somewhat. Looking at these starters here for the Dodgers, Jack, can you just kind of run through these guys and kind of say what stands out to you so far?
Yeah, Paxton was a veteran signing they made this offseason. You know, a guy who's obviously had a lot of injuries, but has also been part of pretty good teams when he's been healthy and productive. You know, he was part of a World Series team with Boston. So with the Dodgers this year, his numbers are decent. He's just been walking a lot of batters,
and it's
been
17 walks to 11 strikeouts or something like that.
Yeah, so it's been a tightrope walk for him basically every time he's been on the mound. Now, so far, he's gotten through it and has been, you know, for a Dodgers team that kind of has its own rotation depth questions, has been a boost so far. Now, at the same time, he's looked to gettable, right? And he's put himself in a lot of dangerous situations. He's blamed his walks on some mechanical things he's working through. And, you know, he'll either fix them or he's going to give the D-backs opportunities to score in tonight's game, I would expect. And then it comes down to, again, can you produce in situational at-bats and that sort of thing. Landon Knack was one of their not one of their top pitching prospects, but a guy that the team had been high on for a while. The reason that he's up and not some of the other more highly touted young pitchers is because all the other ones are hurt right now. So he's done okay. He's coming up. He's had in his two starts a couple rough innings early in each of those games that he was able to bounce back from and still go, I think, six innings in both of them. And then Yoshinobu Yamamoto has been probably the most interesting Dodger to watch just with how up and down the start of his first MLB season has been. He's coming off his best start yet against the Nationals last week when he pitched six scoreless innings. And the big key there was fastball command. This is a guy who the fastball on the surface isn't great. It's a mid-90s fastball. It doesn't have a ton of like late movement or life or anything like that. But he can command it really well. And when he does command it well, it sets up a really good curveball, a really tough splitter, and he can be a really good pitcher. Now, the times he hasn't, he'll miss over the plate a little bit too much, and it's a gettable pitch. Before this last start, like opponents were hitting over 300 against it. So that's the key thing with him is, can he dot the fastball? And if he's missing, especially over the plate, can a team like the D-backs take advantage?
One of the biggest narratives for the Diamondbacks early in the season has just been that Corbin Carroll has not been nearly the player that he was last year. Of course, it's still early, but you're looking at an OPS just over 500. People talk a lot about it, you know, a lot about sophomore slumps and how that can be a thing. It seems like out in LA, James Outman may be walking through a somewhat similar situation there. What have you seen from him so far?
Yeah, this is a guy who even in his rookie season last year was pretty streaky. He was rookie of the month twice and then also had a couple months where they looked like this, where he was batting below 200 and not hitting home runs and susceptible to strikeouts and all those sorts of things. I think compared to somebody like a Corbin Carroll, obviously like James Outman is a less toolsy player and one that's going to be a lot more prone to highs and lows like this or extended slumps like this, just kind of with the way his swing works and trying to match that with the right approach. But, you know, when it clicks, he's a pretty dangerous hitter, and he's capable of, you know, probably has a 20 or 30 home run season in him if he can be consistent. So he's been one of a handful of guys for the Dodgers at the bottom of the lineup that have been pretty inconsistent to start the year, like a Chris Taylor, like a Gavin Lux, like a Kike Hernandez. You know, on the Dodgers homestand before they came on this road trip, they went 3-7. They didn't look very good. And a big reason for that is because the lineup was too top heavy. Now in series in sure. DC and Toronto this week, yeah, they've looked a lot better. Outman's been part of that, trying to turn things around. But yeah, this is a guy that played a really big role for the team last year. There's a reason he was out there in center field on that first fly ball in the NLDS that he couldn't catch. Like he's a core member for them. And yeah, it's kind of getting to that point right now where it's, I think, kind of like the questions that people are asking about Corbin Carroll. Is this a sophomore slump thing? Are there things in your swing that are being exposed a little bit more consistently? And how do you work through that to try to get back to where he was a season ago?
Tell me about Andy Páez. Is he going to, you know, be a 5-WAR player for the next 6 years, like a lot of these other Dodgers youngsters? Or what are we looking at here?
I mean, it's been a really impressive 11 games since he's come up. He's batting over 300. He's hitting everything right now hard, even the balls he's making outs on. This is a guy who only has played 16 AAA games, who last season only played a couple months in the minors before tearing his labrum and having season-ending surgery. He's somebody that the Dodgers have always really liked, have looked at, especially the last couple years, as maybe one of the best pure hitters in their farm system, but not somebody that they were expecting given the surgery he was coming off of and the lack of AAA experience he had coming into this year. He's not somebody that they were expecting, or I think at least banking on being a contributor at the big league level on April 29th. And yet he's starting to elbow his way into a little bit more playing time. He's helped make up for the loss of Jason Hayward, who's been out the last couple of weeks with a back injury. And, you know, he's starting to split a little bit more time with James Outman in center field. So, yeah, the Dodgers, you know, obviously one of the things that has sustained this run of success for them is being able to rely on young depth and produce productive prospects and integrate them into the big league level. And so far, at least, he looks like, yeah, he could be the next candidate to do that.
Do the Dodgers have any weaknesses, or I guess things they're just less elite at than other things is maybe the better way to phrase it?
Yeah, when they've lost games this year, it's usually been for one of two reasons. It's because they either aren't hitting in runners in scoring position, again, hearkening back to a problem that they had in last year's playoffs, or it's the bullpen, which right now is missing Brusdar Graterol, is missing Blake Treinen, is not getting great production from a Joe Kelly or a Ryan Brazier. It's basically Evan Phillips, who's still one of the best closers, maybe the best closer in baseball right now.
Yeah.
Daniel Hudson, who's come back from back-to-back season-ending knee injuries D-back fans are obviously very familiar with him. You know, he thought about retiring this offseason, decided not to, and has come out and become their setup man to begin the year. So, but beyond those two, there's a lot of gettable pitchers in the bullpen or guys who right now have been a little bit inconsistent. So if you can get to the Dodger starters, if you can get them out of the game early, there are opportunities to exploit some of the arms in their bullpen right now. And if you can couple that with, you know, the Dodgers are going to create scoring chances. When you have these four guys at the top of the lineup, they're going to have guys on base. They're going to have opportunities to score. It's about trying to limit the damage when they do and trying to take advantage of a team that, for all the things they do well at the plate, they can be pretty strikeout prone. And I think those things have gone hand in hand in these games where, you know, they'll go 1-for-10 with runners in scoring position and blow a late lead and something like that.
Just bigger picture, Dodgers come in, I believe, 18-12. Maybe not the perfect start, but by and large, it seems like things have been going pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, that homestand they had a couple weeks ago, they went 3-6 on. They lost all three of the series they played. And there were some maybe not alarm bells, but just a bit of a level of concern because of how it looked, right? Because there were so many of these little flaws that have gotten them in some of these previous October disappointments that were popping up. Not hitting with runners in scoring position, not getting that elite level of starting pitching that they've been lacking the last couple of years, the bullpen not being great, the lineup being too top heavy. Like, a lot of those things popped up, at least in a 10-game sample, you know, a couple weeks ago. Now, since then, they've shown that when they are playing well, they're the best team in baseball. They scored 10 runs three times in a week. They're on this string of starts right now where I don't think they've given up more than three runs in the last week. Tyler Glasnow has looked really, really sharp for them as the new ace of the rotation. And some of the other pitchers have gotten a little bit more consistent here too. So like, this is a team, what we've seen in this stretch, how they've been playing these last on this trip coming into this series, this is the team I think you're going to see a lot more regularly in the regular season. It's a team that should still win the NL West, that should still win 100 games, that should still be going into October as one of the front runners to win a World Series. At the same time, though, even though they have a $300 million payroll, even though they spent, you know, $1.5 billion this offseason, there are holes in the roster that have already been exploited at times. And I think that will be the thing to watch with this team is how well can they address some of that stuff? How well can they prevent some of these common reoccurrences that have hurt them in years past from popping up again? And can they, when it matters most, be playing at their best going into October? I mean, that's the thing about this team, right? Everything is through the lens of October. Things would have to go really wrong for them to not be in that spot, which is why, you know, it's just a different kind of team to follow because the expectations are so high. They've set the bar so high that, when they do have a bad series or a bad week, it becomes a big deal. And then when they go back to winning 6 out of 7, it's like, okay, this is how they're supposed to be playing, right?
Yeah, well, no matter what the payroll disparity is or what the talent gap might be on paper, we certainly learned in October that you got to play the games and see what happens. So we'll see what happens here over the next few days at Chase Field. Jack, thanks again for your time. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks.